for being willing to share some of your admissions knowledge with our listeners, because obviously we're getting into admissions season, and so our students are starting to have a lot of questions about getting accepted. So we appreciate you being here today to help our listeners navigate that process.
And thanks for all the great LSAT tips for our listeners. Of course. So it was great.
Happy to share. So my first question for you is, since the COVID-19 pandemic began, have you noticed more people interested in applying to law school, less, no change? What are students' feelings about applying to law school from your point of view right now?
We're seeing more law school admissions business this year than year over year. There's no question that we're seeing more inquiries, and I think it'll ultimately significantly increase our law school admissions business this year.
That's good for us. That's great to hear.
Yes.
What are you guys seeing?
We're hiring tutors actively. So if anybody listening has a 99th percentile LSAT score and wants to tutor, let us know.
Go for it. It's not going to be you, me, or Christine.
All right. So let me ask this one. I guess, Christine, I'll ask this one of you. So you're seeing an increase in applicants. Are applicants bringing different concerns to you than they were bringing before?
Not necessarily, actually. I mean, with respect to the pandemic specifically, I'm generally the one that's bringing that up and asking questions as to, you know, how they're informing their decisions based on, you know, the current state of affairs and remote learning, et cetera. I've been seeing that most of the applicants are just more, you know, asking the same types of questions. Personal statement is still, you know, right top of mind for many people, how to get started. So it's not necessarily any different right now.
I think there is some concern in the law school applicants that I've spoken to about starting school, law school online, and you know, the quality of their education, especially if that continues. On the other hand, there seems to be a lot of optimism about a vaccine coming out in early 2021. So the people applying this cycle, by the time they start law school, hopefully much of the population will have been vaccinated, and the restrictions that we're dealing with now we won't be dealing with.
Well, we can all hope that will be the case.
That,
fingers crossed for the people watching the video. So, with respect to that, and especially considering that some students may be applying to law schools that are already planning to start online for the next season, or that may be soon announcing plans to start online for the next season, does that lead to any changes in an applicant's application strategy? Should they be highlighting different traits about themselves than they would in a pre-pandemic world?
I think in general, adaptability is just something that everybody is valuing a little bit more these days. I don't think it's going to fundamentally change what law schools look for in a law school personal statement. It might change a little bit addenda. Again, if you're showing that adaptability, I think that little grit, perseverance, resilience, those qualities have kind of become more important in the last 6 months. But fundamentally, I don't think you're going to see big changes in the core of the personal statement. Christine, what do you have to add to that?
Yeah, I think that adaptability piece, you know, is a big piece, and that's a thread that we carried pre-pandemic. You know, that you know, ability to take on many things and handle, you know, different aspects and multitask and think critically about different things. I think one of the aspects that when I was working with applicants, you know, from March on, when the bottom fell out, essentially, and people were making decisions about where to go, I was counseling many of our applicants to look at schools for their adaptability too, and how they handled themselves and how that frontline admissions office was taking questions and handling questions, and are they forthcoming with information, and are they keeping in contact, and how they're handling, because that's setting the tone for the type of community that you're going to be joining. And in order for you to be successful, ultimately, you want to be in a community that is able to adapt to those types of changes as well, right alongside you. And you know, you don't want to be the only one that's adapting and showing those characteristics. You want the community that you're joining to already, you know, be setting that tone. So I was you know, counseling many of my clients to look and be very cognizant of how you're being treated as an applicant, and what's, you know, how the offices are moving forward when they're making the transition to online, because it was on the fly. I mean, nobody was prepared for it. So that was a big testimony to how schools were doing.
I love that. I love the idea that maybe these applicants matter too, and they actually deserve to be treated like humans. Shock. One tiny follow-up on that, and I won't put you on the spot and ask you to say anything about schools that are doing a poor job of this, but do you have any examples of things you've seen that are admissions offices and schools doing a really good job of adaptability right now that other schools should be replicating?
You know, across the board, what I've been seeing is that schools are adapting well, adapting as well as they can, given the circumstances. They're navigating waters that they've never navigated before and making really broad sweeping changes that are affecting hundreds of people all at once, you know, both students, faculty, other community members. I've seen across the board that schools are doing a really good job and taking, students' concerns and conversely applicants' concerns to be top of mind.
This is a rather broad question, and feel free to narrow it as much as you want to or to take all the time that you need to answer it. You know, there are so many different pieces of the application, and I think it's hard for students to know or for applicants to know what's more important, what's less important. So how schools weigh LSAT versus GPA versus the other pieces of an application?
We started addressing this earlier when we were talking about statistical significance. And, you know, when admissions committees are looking at applications, they're looking to set students up for success. And so they're looking for areas of strength and, you know, to look into a crystal ball and predict that success. And so the quantitative measures, the LSAT and the GPA, have been studied, and there is statistical significance that the higher the score, the better a student can perform in the first year of law school, which is an important year. That said, it's not the be-all and end-all. Many, if not most, schools, and I think, you know, as we're seeing at Accepted, and I think, you know, law schools will see is an uptick in applications, is that many schools have many quantitatively qualified applicants to choose from. And so that's where the qualitative measures come in. That's the personal statement, the resume, the letters of recommendation. That makes the application three-dimensional. And so when schools have 5,000 to 10,000 applications to fill classes of 200 to 500 students, they're going to be looking at the other qualitative pieces, the personal statement. Can you write clearly and concisely? Are you able to articulate why you want to go to law school and why you want to go to law school now? Your resume, what have you done? Have you been employed? Which is important when you're applying to a professional school where ultimately the goal is employment. You want to have a track record of employment. So those pieces are the differentiating pieces that go alongside those qualitative measures that have that statistical significance.
Let's maybe talk about one of those qualitative pieces. I know that there's room to do an entire podcast episode, and maybe someday we will, about this. But in the time that we do have now, what are your thoughts on the personal statement, that kind of most important qualitative measure on the application? How can students make a great one?
Yeah, so my first advice is three words: proofread, proofread, proofread. You want to have a proofread personal statement. You don't want my eyes to be the first person looking at this narrative. In a career, the legal career, where attention to detail is of utmost importance, treat this as your first contract. And so you want all details, all T's, you know, crossed, all I's dotted. You know, that said, the personal statement is, you know, this open-ended question. And you're writing about yourself, which is often, you know, most difficult topic to write about. And you're trying to boil it down into two pages double spaced. And so you're looking at, like, you know, 20 plus years of living, and you're trying to, you know, find that one pivotal life-changing moment and, you know, and then write clearly and concisely. When I'm working with clients and talking about the personal statement and I'm brainstorming with them, one of the first things I do is just in conversation ask them why they want to go to law school. And in that conversation, you know, generally there's a few themes that come out, And so then in that conversation, I can ask back like, okay, well, let's talk about this. Like what happened here or what happened there? And then in that conversation, I'll be like, okay, that's your personal statement. Go ahead, go writing, you know, that type of thing. In my career, I read a lot of personal statements. And to hopefully dispel some of the fears of applicants is I read more good than bad. And, you know, and the bad ones were the ones that just weren't proofread, you know, that had grammatical errors in the first paragraph or wrote that they wanted to go to Northeastern and I'm reading for BU. So that's, you know, that's a strike against me. So, you know, so those types of things, you know, that's what makes a personal statement stand out as a bad personal statement. A good personal statement has a clear, concise narrative. It starts off strong, it ends strong, and it has, you know, details, you know, just basically like the same essays that you were learning in fourth grade.
I completely agree with everything Christina said. You want your personal statement to have an engaging opening, a persuasive middle, and a conclusion that concludes. The distance between the opening and the conclusion can't be too long, and it all has to be built around a cohesive theme that addresses your motivation for law school. But I think it's also important that applicants keep in mind that the goal of the personal statement, the purpose of the personal statement is threefold. Number one, it has to provide insight into the human being writing the essay. And that goes to motivation, you know, like Christine was talking about. It has to provide insight into you, the human being, and your motivation and fitness for law school. Two, it has to add value to the other elements of the application. It shouldn't just repeat it. Don't just tell them, you know, your LSAT, they already know that. Don't tell them your resume or job history, they know that. It has to go deeper than that. It has to add value. And three, and this goes very much to Christine's proofread point, and that is it's a demonstration of your writing ability, your communication skill, which is foundational for lawyers. So just something to keep in mind.
Yes, as somebody who practiced law for a while, I can tell you that writing is just an immense portion of what you do for the rest of your life as a lawyer. So that's very, very important. And I've always thought that's, you know, their first look at your writing skills is your personal statement. So I think especially in law school, the personal statement is really important. So let me ask you, Linda, the job market for attorneys, I know here in California, but I think across the nation is fairly tight and it can be difficult to get a job out of law school. And there are, I would say kind of there's like a three-tier classification of law schools. There are those which I would call the gold standard, which are the ABA accredited law schools, the law schools that are accredited by the American Bar Association. There are schools that are not accredited by the ABA, but some are accredited by state bar associations. Like here in California, there's a number of California bar accredited schools. And then there are schools that are unaccredited. So I want to put the ABA accredited schools to the side right now, because I think for the most part, just about any ABA accredited school is going to train you and is going to you know, give you at least some help finding a job. But if you have students, clients who are looking into those other tiers of schools, what do you tell them about that, if anything?
Be careful. Be very careful. I think it depends on their reasons for wanting a law degree. If they want to practice law, I probably advise them to avoid the non-ABA accredited schools. If they want a legal education because they want to invest, they want the education for the knowledge, not as preparation for a career as a lawyer, I might be a little bit more lenient or open to the concept. Also, you know, depends on, can they get into an ABA accredited school? Maybe they don't have a choice. And then again, it would depend very much on what their motivations are. Christine, though, I know you had actually more to say on this point.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there are so many opportunities in ABA accredited schools that afford you, again, more opportunity. I think non-ABA accredited and unaccredited schools are just limiting. But at the same time, Linda, I think, give good advice in that think about why you're applying to law school and, you know, and do the same type of shopping that you would do, you know, if applying to accredited schools. You know, look at the career placement, you know, look at where the alumni are, look at what faculty are doing, look at the type of education, talk to other students, you know, talk to alumni, talk to graduates. And that's all the same advice I give to applicants who are applying to accredited schools. You know, and if it's fitting the need and, you know, and you're seeing yourself there, then okay, but I caution very highly because it does limit. And especially if you ultimately want to transfer to an AVA accredited school, you cannot, in most cases, transfer from an unaccredited school to an accredited school. At BU, it was there right in our instructions that, and you actually, we had a drop down of all schools, select where you did your first year of law school, and we did not have any unaccredited schools listed because we were only taking transcripts from accredited schools. So it does limit you even while you're pursuing an education, and then it ultimately might limit you afterwards.
So we talked about the people who are so sure that they want to go to law school that they're willing to consider a non-accredited school. What about the students who aren't sure if they want to go to law school? When you get students who are debating whether or not to apply, what do you tell them?
I advise them to work in a law office or do work related to what they see themselves doing after law school. Brendan mentioned early on, law school primarily prepares you to practice law, to be a lawyer. Law school is a means to an end, as are most graduate programs. And you want to increase the likelihood that the end is something you will find satisfying. Both of you kind of lucked out, and I've lucked out, but I don't, you know, I think it's very risky to just kind of go to law school to go to law school because you don't want to face the working world, for example. I had one of my offspring consider that and decided against it, but we said we weren't going to finance it wisely at that point. So that's, I would get as much information as you can. And the best information is just by working in a law office, if at all possible, legal clinics, you know, that kind of thing. One of Accepted's consultant's daughter was seriously considering law school and worked at a Manhattan law firm for 6 weeks and decided she absolutely hated it. It was the best 6 week miserable experience she ever had, because if she'd gone to law school, she would have invested thousands upon tens of thousands of dollars for years only to discover that she was in the wrong field.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've talked a bit about it before in that law school is a very expensive investment of time and money. And so it is not something that you should enter into lightly. You know, while I was at BU even, talking with clients, I'm talking with prospective applicants who weren't sure. And I would counsel them right in my office and say, do informational interviewing. Find someone who's holding your dream job right now and talk to them. And see how they, you know, what they do on a daily basis, how they got there, what, you know, what path led them there. And in that interviewing, you're going to come to your, you know, conclusions and your decisions. But it is too much time and money to do it without being certain.
So it sounds like it's a good idea to get some experience in a law firm just to understand whether or not you want to go to law school, Christine. But do law schools prefer legal experience to other experience?
Prefer only in that those that have gone and have had legal experience know, and you have some sort of certainty that they know what they're getting into. And they've done all of that kind of information gathering, and they're not coming in, you know, lighthearted. But that said, you know, and I mentioned on, you know, the resume piece, and there's no perfect formula for the path that leads people to law school. And you know, at BU, we admitted flight attendants, we admitted firefighters, you know, we admitted bartenders and, you know, and people directly from undergrad. So people are coming to law school from all different avenues. It's just a matter of making sure that you are, you know, staking your claim that I understand why I want to go to law school. This is my time now. And, you know, and my narrative is my application. And I'm making all of those points for myself. The preference is only in that we know then that the applicant has done the legwork and has an understanding of what the culture is. So again, after what Linda was saying, after those 6 weeks, if they're still there, that's a good sign that they, you know, are committed and wanting to go.
We're talking about a little bit about one way of increasing your level of work experience while waiting to apply to law school by actually working at a law firm. But in these strange times that we're in, a lot of law firms have canceled their internship programs, are maybe not hiring paralegals and legal assistants. So during COVID-19, do you have any thoughts on what applicants can be doing right now to pad their resumes and make themselves look better as applicants for law school or graduate school?
One of the pieces of the resume is that it serves as a timeline. And so, you know, at Boston University, no time can be unaccounted for. So you're going to have to account for your time. And that includes this, you know, this pandemic time. And so you're going to have to talk about what you've done. And so if your application and your narrative is, I want to be an agent for change. That's why I'm going to law school. And there's not much evidence of that when there is opportunity. And I understand, and admissions committees are going to understand that your safety is first and foremost. And so, you know, there are safe ways of doing things. And if that means that in this time of pandemic and elections, perhaps if you want to be an agent for change and you're not involved in the elections, you know, and whether that's just, you know, calling for or texting for your politician, your candidate of choice, but you're just staying at home and playing video games, then, you know, it's hard to make that argument. And so there are opportunities even in this time of uncertainty. And as long as you're maintaining safety and doing things well, and also continuing that narrative thread as to why you want to go to law school, you know, you should be able to account for your time.
And how would, just to quickly follow up on that, how would someone format or include that in a resume to account for time where maybe they didn't have any kind of full-time or formal part-time position, but they were doing, say, mutual aid in their community, campaign volunteering, that kind of thing?
So on your resume, a resume for law school applications, as I've always said, is quite different than that kind of business resume. It doesn't have to stay on one page. You can have more of a CV than just a standard business, you know, one-page resume. And so volunteer opportunities, unpaid internships, you know, different opportunities, you can account for that in your law school application resume. And if it doesn't fit, if it doesn't work, then an addenda, adding an addendum specific to your resume and accounting for that time, I think is totally fine and welcome to a committee. You never want to have the committee ask the question why or what were they doing and not have it answered in your own words. And so adding kind of that informational aspect in an addendum is fine and welcome.
I just want to add to what Christine says. There are so many opportunities right now. It might be harder to get a job, but volunteer opportunities are all over the place. And volunteering doesn't just mean using your Netflix subscription. There's community service and leadership, free legal clinics, hotlines, representing tenants who are being evicted, contact tracing, organizing services for the vulnerable. The election, obviously, is right in front of us. There's the social unrest that's kind of sweeping the country. There are so many opportunities. There's also the possibility, and this is a harder one, of actually getting a law-related job. Now, that is harder because law, everybody's working from home now. And then there's a possibility of trying to get a job in a related, in an area that's related to where you want to go in law. So maybe you want to go to corporate law. So try and get a job in business. Maybe you're interested in patent law. Make sure that you have the technical background to support that interest, but also get a job in a related technical field. So there are just so many opportunities and so many ways to not pad your resume, but to build your resume. And that should really be the goal.
Well, that's all really helpful advice. Thank you for that, Linda. I appreciate that. So I think we have run to the end of the questions that we have to ask about you. Do you want to tell our listeners how to reach out to Accepted to get help from you guys on getting into the school of their dreams?
Sure. Well, you can go to Christine's bio and I will send you that. Do you know your bio page? I don't know your bio page at the moment. I didn't prepare it, but I will send it to you. You can also go to accepted.com/law/services to learn about how we can help you. Tons of free resources for law school applicants at accepted.com/law.
And as far as your podcast, what is the best way for our listeners to find and subscribe to that?
blog.accepted.com/listen. And we're also on, you know, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, you name it, we're there. The name of the podcast is Admission Straight Talk.
Admission Straight Talk. So we'll put all of that in our show notes as well. So just if you're listening to this on our podcast, go check the show notes and click through there.
Sounds good. Thank you. Thank you very much for having us. It's been delightful. And thank you for sharing all that information about the LSAT.
Well, thank you for joining us and for your wonderful questions about the LSAT. We appreciate having you on, and this is our first podcast collaboration too, so hopefully it delights both of our listeners/viewers.
Same here. Listener, thank you too for joining Brendan Frankel and Yelena Ward of Test Max Prep and the Legal Level Podcast, as well as Accepted's own law school admissions consultant, Christine Carr, and me for our 384th episode and our first ever joint podcast episode. A quick reminder, grab your free copy of the Law School Admissions Guide, 8 Tips for Success, Acceptance Informative Free Guide for Law School Applicants at accepta.com/384download. And a final request, if you found the show worthwhile, please share the good word by leaving a review on iTunes. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admissions Straight Talk. There's a link in the show notes at accepta.com/384 to our iTunes page where you can leave that review, iTunes or Apple Podcasts. And if you want to leave a review elsewhere, that's fine too. Thanks again for coming. This is Admissions Straight Talk produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.